Let me start with the most important part of the presentation. This is a study funded oddly and for reasons I don't fully understand by the NIH Human Genome Research Initiative, because it doesn't actually have really anything to do with human genome research, except that the company involved is a biotech company. The background is, of course, the growth of open source software, and not just software, but expansion of the open source idea into other fields. People are now talking about open source genomics. Can we create an open source database of DNA sequences, of synthetic biology constructs? The meme, the idea of open source is expanding. And that's led to a rather robust economic debate over why it is that people do this. Is it, in fact, a plausible business model strategy? Is it, in fact, a strategy that just takes advantage of kind of holes or interstices in the marketplace, right? Using people's altruism or using people who are essentially paid with time left over in academic context or whatever, and also the role of things like ideology and the belief that software ought to be free and so forth. And depending on how that debate gets resolved, open source might or might not be a sort of broadly scalable phenomenon, right? If you think the answer is this is just a few people who've got time on their hands who can sit together and hack out code, well, we might end up with some interesting code for some sorts of small applications, and we clearly do have markets in which it's quite significant, but it's not going to displace proprietary software in the world. If, on the other hand, you think that there's a real sort of robust business model associated with open source, then the prospects of sort of real competition between open source and proprietary models get much more significant. So one of the things we wanted to find out was who uses open source software and why. And we have a kind of nice natural test of this phenomenon with a company called Affymetrix. Affymetrix makes gene chips. They make actual physical chips with the human genome on them, with individual genes kind of coded out and wired to particular leads on the chip. So you can throw something in to a vat, see which pieces of the gene it attaches to, and then measure that statistically to find out what's in it. This, of course, requires software controlling, and Affymetrix uses a strategy that's reasonably common these days in the open source world called dual versioning, in which the company actually takes the same software and breaks it into two versions, an open source version and a proprietary version, so that people who want to use the open source version can do so, people who want to use the proprietary version can do so. Well, why would people pay for something that they could have for free? The rationale, Affymetrix's rationale in particular, is, well, we think that the people who are taking this software because they want to then make productive reuse of it. They want to modify it, make it more suitable for particular uses with respect to their products and so forth, might want a proprietary rather than an open source version, so they are not in turn restricted in what they can do with the software that they modify and redistribute to others. So Affymetrix's idea engaging in dual versioning is, well, all right, people who just want to make academic use of this stuff can use the open source piece, they won't have to pay. People who want to make a commercial use that involves redistributing this software in some new version may want to choose the proprietary model. And so they release, there are several different software packages in this study that fit into two different licenses. One is a GPL license, one is a what I call a quasi-BSD license. It's a kind of homebrew, very odd-looking license that says things like, we'd really, really appreciate it if you do the following things. Whether that's an enforceable contract is an interesting question.
Scott, quickly a bit more about what their business model is, and because my sense is that they basically spend a lot of money developing their chips and think of themselves as selling the chips, so kind of anything that makes people more congenial towards the chips is generally, like, you know, the free coffee they provide to sell their wireless, or the free wireless they provide.
They are not in the business primarily of selling this software, this, except insofar as the software, some variant of it, is necessary to make the chip run. That's right.
Is there any price differential between the two modes of marketing?
Yeah, sure. The proprietary software you pay for, and the open source stuff they give away for free.
And one comes with more support, right?
No, actually, that's not true. The versioning in the Affymetrix world, the versioning really is just about, we think different users might actually want to have different legal license structures, right? Want to have the ability to control what they do with the version they modify and reuse down the line. I'm sorry?
How much money is at stake? Is it $100?
I don't. It's not a $100 piece of software. It's more than that. But I don't know the exact number for the different programs.
These are not cost-justified differences. These are basically differences in demand. This is the extra rights you get from being.
That's right. They're right. They're certainly not cost-justified in the making of the software. Yeah. I don't know how much it costs them to make it, but again, to go back to Scott's point, right, they're not trying to maximize revenue from the software because they are, first and foremost, a biotechnology company, not a software company. And that's, you know, maybe if the answer is you're just in the business of selling software, you've got somewhat different results. Nonetheless, I think this is a kind of nice natural test of open source adoption patterns, because we've got, not from the perspective of the providing company, but from the perspective of the acquirer, right? You've got a choice between essentially identical programs under different pieces. So we did two things. First thing we did is we collected a sample of publications that resulted from research using the Affymetrix software. We've got 178 such publications. We did a robustness check, which confirmed through the survey that I'll talk about in a minute, confirmed that the users who actually create a publication having used the Affymetrix gene chip essentially almost always cite the software they use to do it, right? Part of your scientific paper methodology is here's what we used, here's how we produced it, and so they actually do cite the software in question. We also oversampled commercial publishers here because our worry was, okay, these are publications in academic journals. We're more likely in this case to get academics rather than commercial entities publishing. And there were, in fact, more academics than commercial entities, but as we'll see, that actually turns out to be true of users more generally. Second thing we did is we then surveyed users of the software. And working with, we got basically got the Affymetrix head of marketing to forward out our survey to all of their customers and users of the software, and we got a pretty decent response rate. It was something on the order of 40%+. Which for a web survey is quite nice. I think we got that high response rate because it was the Affymetrix marketing manager and not some random guy from Stanford who sent it out. So we've got these kind of two different data sets. David.
So for the sample publications, do those include patent publications?
No, these are academic publications. And the papers got the methodology in which journals we searched, but we basically sort of searched online databases in the field for publications. So, characteristics of the authors, of the 107, we've got 110 academic authors and 55 commercial authors, a few kind of nonprofit governmental authors. Commercial folks split into the pharma industry and the bio industry, and we broke those out. There were some joint collaborations. Most of them are U.S., but a decent chunk of foreign. And what's interesting, notable here is even in the publications, right, which were more academic than commercial, there's a preference for the proprietary rather than the open source software. More of the people use the proprietary software than the open source software. And that's a puzzle, which we'll think about in a minute.
Yeah, I mean, that's what I was going to ask about. Is it really that much of a puzzle? My sense about this is, as a first approximation, I would assume that people who are willing to pay for the proprietary software are going to be those who are more intent on making very intensive use upon it, including these after uses and modifications. And I would expect that those would be the people who tend to publish.
That may be right. Although I guess I would have said it seemed more likely to me that the academics would be more likely to use open source because A, it's cheaper and they have fewer resources and that they are in turn more likely to publish. And in fact, that turns out to be true. So basically, the commercial users who are publishing are essentially all using proprietary software. The academic users, a majority of them are using the proprietary software, but a decent chunk of them are using open source software. So in the academic study, we do find this distinction between academic users and commercial users in which choice decisions they make.
One of the things, of course, about these academic users, which you can't quite pin down, is many of these guys are academics on Monday, Wednesdays, and Fridays, and on Tuesdays and Thursdays they have their own closed corporation. And the issue is whether or not the academic users who are publishing also have commercial access.
Yeah, so
and what their home institution's rules are about what they can do with the information.
So that's fair, and there's no kind of transparent way to test that. I will say, I mean, we have a number of, many of these papers are co-authored, so there are some hybrid academic and commercial co-authorship relationships. There aren't that many. There were only 8 out of the 178, and those we ended up categorizing into primarily academic or primarily commercial on the basis of number of participants, who was listed as lead author, and so forth. It is right to say that some of those academics are probably also engaged in commercial work, although, because we focused on the question of what did they list their institutional affiliation as, I think we pick up a little bit of that. That is, they're not publishing as Company X, right? They're publishing as, so-and-so from University of California at Berkeley.
Medical center, even the so-called pure academics, these are all guys who are working on grants. All of them have sort of very strong secretive impulses and so forth. I would think that an academic, like us useless lawyers, I mean, we don't have any real institutions of scale. We're self-proprietors, very little outside support relative to these guys. I think the scientific community in the hospitals and so forth, and in the medical schools, is really very, very different from what we consider to be an academic.
I agree with that.
And much more than, I don't know, AJ, you work around with those characters. I mean, is that wrong?
No, I think that's a fair assessment. Depending on the federal grant money, more so than the industry.
Well, right, although dependent on federal grant money is a very different thing from dependent on an industry, right? I mean, they're not, that doesn't make you a commercial user. All right. So,
make the priorities and the secretive stuff very important.
Right. So, second, and to me the more interesting piece is the survey evidence, 437 total respondents. This is an actual cross-section of users. And here, 305, or about 69%, are academics. Only about 20% are at private firms. Here we find something somewhat different than we did in the academic publications. We still see a preference for proprietary software, but we see a larger use of open source software in the survey respondents. Now, the astute mathematicians among you will note that 84.4% and 57.4% do not add to 100. That is because, and here is the second sort of odd finding for us, a lot of the respondents are using some combination of open source and proprietary software, right? So 84% of the people are using at least some proprietary software, 57% of the people are using at least some open source software. A decent chunk of these people are using a sort of interesting combination of open source and proprietary software. That creates some problems for the survey, which we'll talk about in a minute. And here, interestingly, with the survey, we don't see the same academic versus commercial distinction we saw in the publication list. Right now, the numbers seem to break out about the same. There are a few more open source users in the academic community than in the commercial community, but really not quite that. Nothing that's statistically significant. Because we have this overlap, right? So we surveyed people not really thinking that a large number of them were going to use both open source and proprietary software at the same time from the same company. And so one of the things that happened if you just run the full survey numbers is you get some pretty mixed results. So people say things, you know, say, oh, among open source users, for example, among proprietary users, for example, something like 35 or 40% of them say the reason they chose their software was it's lower cost. That's odd, right? But it turns out that many of those are, in fact, people who are using both open source and proprietary software. And because we didn't design the survey to distinguish between those different uses because we didn't think it was going to be a problem, that may just be an artifact of the survey. So we then pulled out a restricted sample, which is to say people who used only open source or only proprietary software. And we just considered their responses. And these are the results in those cases. I've also got the unrestricted stuff in the paper. It's much closer. There are many fewer distinctions, as you might expect, given that there's a lot of overlapping people. So we do see open source software users, when asked why they chose the software they did, emphasizing lower cost, 64% to 21%, and emphasizing the freedom to modify their software, 54% versus 16.9%. People who chose proprietary software, by instance, were more likely to point to having an existing institutional license, which I think also explains why there were 21% who said the proprietary software was lower cost. It was lower cost for them because it had already been paid for. Proprietary software users also emphasize the convenience of the software, though that number is less statistically significant than the others. We also tested the differences in the use people made of the software, right? Because one of the Affymetrix is original theory, right? And one of the theories for why you would engage in dual versioning is people who want to make certain uses of it will want one piece. People who want to make other uses of it will want another. And the kind of story or the ethos behind the open source community is this is a kind of open collaborative community in which we fix bugs, we modify and improve each other's software, and the sort of versions get better over time. And interestingly, what we find is very little difference between open source and proprietary users in their willingness to report bugs, to send bug fixes, to improve the software, and interestingly, on the last point, if they do improve the software, to release that modified software to others. So while there are, you know, while there are differences in these numbers, none of them turn out to be statistically significant. We can't find significantly different usage patterns among the open source users and the proprietary software users. What are we finding? Well, we find all kinds of users, academic users, commercial users, use proprietary software. Almost half of the people we surveyed use some sort of mix. They seem to be kind of taking from a grab bag of open source and proprietary. They don't seem to be using them for different purposes, right? Focusing if they want to modify on either open source or on proprietary. And then we find, I think most curiously, though I want to emphasize because we've now drilled down to a reasonably small subset, the fairly small sample size here, that open source users in this industry are not complying with the GPL. So one of the things that we asked them was, did you improve the software? Of those of you who improved the software, did you distribute the improvements? Of those of you who distributed the improvements, did you distribute them to everyone, or did you distribute them only to your own existing customers? Most of the open source users who released improved software distributed that improved software only to their own customers. This was 67.9% in the unrestricted sample. That could have been, oh, some of these people are just talking about the proprietary software they restricted only to their own customers. But in the restricted sample, the people who are only using open source, 83.3% of them released them only to their own customers, rather than to the world at large.
What is the remedy for breach of this particular?
Well, so this is an interesting legal question. As Bob Hillman well knows from having dealt with the principles of software contracts, there is a rigorous dispute in the open source community as to whether provisions like the GPL are in fact contracts at all. The GPL purists will tell you that this is not a contract. There is no breach of contract here. It is instead copyright infringement, so that the theoretic remedy would be for Affymetrix, who released this under the GPL, to sue those people who violated the terms of the GPL license for copyright infringement because they are not complying with the terms of that license. An alternative view, and to me the better view, is that this is in fact a contract, and that the right question is, right, that they are in breach of that contract if they've not complied with the terms. The question of who that contract is with becomes a somewhat more difficult one, right, since it is nominally at least with the provider of the software, Affymetrix, but is at least arguably designed to benefit the public at large, and therefore the question of whether a third-party beneficiary, somebody who wants access to the software but can't get it, could file a lawsuit, is an interesting question.
That's a different one than simply trying to enjoin them from publishing.
Absolutely. All right, so, I mean, what can we learn from this? I have to say, right, I mean, I came in thinking we'd have an interesting study about kind of how people sort themselves into open source and proprietary business models, and the answer is they don't. Right? People seem to just kind of grab whatever tools they're using that they seem good to the job. They don't seem to be paying a lot of attention to whether they are open source or proprietary. While there are some differences in the reasons they chose the particular software, they're not using these tools differently. So Affymetrix's business hypothesis, right, that is we want a dual version because people want these things for different purposes, doesn't turn out to be true because people are just kind of mixing and matching in this industry. And as part of that mix and matching, right? They are ignoring the very thing that is supposed to make open source different, at least from the lawyer's perspective, right? Which is that it comes with these legally binding obligations that travel with the software. Now, that last finding, as I said, is a small sample. I think this is something that needs to be tested in a broader group across multiple industries. It may well be that people in the biotechnology industry, as opposed to people in the more core software industries, just haven't internalized the open source norm, right? That, you know, they get some software, they use the software, they don't know from GPL, they just kind of use whatever they want to use and they do whatever they want to do. But it does seem to me at a minimum that the kind of story of the law in action here, right, how people are actually using these contracts differs pretty dramatically from the story we tell ourselves about the open source system and how it works. Becky.
So this is really interesting. But you know, one thing that occurs to me that's a little weird about this context and that you might be testing something a little different than what you think you're testing because of that is that it's the same software that's available open source and in proprietary version. And usually the open source advocates think open source software is better because it has the attributes of past open source community improvements, debugging, etc.
Right.
And you don't have that going for the open source version here. The open source version is identical to the proprietary version, right?
At least identical when first released. But of course, that's going to be true of any open source software when it's first released.
Right. So is Affymetrix playing an open source, an ongoing open source role here of debugging, of you know, getting the benefits of its customers? Improving the open source.
It's a good question, right? And so the answer is yes, but I think in this particular context, of course, you're right that they may be biasing towards proprietary software because, of course, Affymetrix's interest as a dual versioner is to improve not just its open source piece, but the proprietary pieces with whatever bug fixes they get reported to them too. Now, I have not had a conversation with Affymetrix about whether and under what circumstances they do that. I mean, I think for Affymetrix to do that and then put it in their proprietary model might create problems for them from a legal perspective. Absolutely, because if I... if I release something under the GPL, right, and then you modify it under the GPL, those modifications in turn are subject to the GPL, and if I take them back into my proprietary software, I think they're probably okay as long as they then release the same stuff in an open source version too, right? That is, they are making it available on code. So I think the answer is they're probably fine to do that, but it is right to say, if there is an advantage from iteration in open source software that you don't see in proprietary, Affymetrix's software isn't going to demonstrate that advantage, though the improvements made by downstream people might.
Plus the open source people know that the bug improvements they're putting in will spill over to the proprietary product, right?
Right. Would that make them happier, say?
Sad.
Mark, could I just ask what it would mean in this particular context to release to people other than your customers? So is there kind of a source forge for biotechnology that would be the place where they would go if they were to comply with GPL mandates?
Right.
Part of the problem might be not that they haven't internalized the norms, but that
they haven't internalized the structure. The biotechnology industry hasn't built a structure.
Right. Which is they don't have a commons right. Like SourceForge. It would be interesting to figure.
Yeah, out. Yeah, I don't know the answer to that, and it is worth. You're right. It is absolutely worth figuring out, David.
I want to drill down a bit on the claim that they're in breach because I'm not quite sure that that follows from what you've said. The requirement in GPL 2, at least, which is I think what you're using, is that you must cause modified versions to be released under the GPL that were to be made available to all third parties under the terms of the GPL. It's not clear to me that they're not doing that. It's not explicitly a you must post on a specified
right.
website, and it could never be that because it's generic. By convention, I think within the sort of open source projects I'm familiar with, the license notice that you're required to put on the derivative when you distribute it serves that function because the third party who receives it, your customer who receives it with a legend that says, everybody has a right to this. If you modify, you must follow the same terms. So it's not clear to me that distribution under those conditions to the customer base is a violation.
Even absent public availability.
Yeah, I don't know what public availability
all right. Right.
necessarily would mean. I think you would be under an obligation upon request to
right.
provide the modified version once you have distributed it. But there is no sort of accepted place in which you can go and say, I've now discharged my obligation under the GPL. I think that the sort
right.
of viral language that's been used is designed to say it spreads by recipient. So I don't know that it's necessarily established that there's a breach because I don't believe there's a convention beyond making clear to recipients that they can do whatever the hell they want. Subject to proviso that if they modify, they then have to use the license under which they received it.
Right.
That's just a technical background. But the other point I just want to make in terms of the norms, I think people have been a little bit misled by the PR around open source into thinking that it's bug fixes and that there's inherently a claim of superiority. I can tell you from dealing with people early who are involved very centrally and very early in the movement, the freedom simply to run stuff free from restrictions is very important to these folks. And if you actually advise them that you can get legal advantage by limiting, and by kicking the contract rules specifically, by limiting users' freedom to run any given version, that's just a kill point. So the ability to just run, regardless of any kind of superiority of iteration, is really quite important. And that, I don't think, is inconsistent with what you're finding.
Right.
Although
it is at least conceptually inconsistent with your first technical point, with which I think at least you're probably right. That is, a world in which the ethos of freedom to run software is in considerable tension with the but of course I can effectively control who gets distribution of that software by the artifice of sending it to some people, not making it publicly available to others, and yeah, if somebody finds out about it and asks me for it, I've got to give it to them. Right. So, I mean, I think you're right to say the conceptual, the way in which people from the outside world think of the open source movement and the way the folks inside the open source movement actually think of what they're doing are somewhat different. And this is, this may be one of those kind of inflection points, right? It may be that what people are doing here is just something that doesn't look like, from an outsider's perspective, an open source ethos, even if it's technically in compliance. I don't know that it's clear, I don't know that it's been resolved, whether or not sort of holding it, distributing it to certain people, not making it publicly available, but saying I will do so, having a practice of doing so if and when people find you and request it is sufficient to comply with the GPL. But
Jonathan. The different results you get in the publication surveys and the sort of general web survey are sort of puzzling. And
yes.
I want to speculate wildly on a possible story, which I think is in accord with the general picture you want to paint here, which is, the most salient finding in these two studies is that when you, people who publish are moving away from open source and towards proprietary software in pretty large degrees. So maybe the answer is that these things sort of...
Especially the commercial users.
So maybe the answer is that all these people, especially the commercial users, want some form of control or secrecy, and all of these various methods are substitutes for one another. So you can keep things as a trade secret, and then it doesn't really matter whether you're using open source or proprietary, it's just a trade secret, or you can patent it, same story. But the minute you start publishing things, now you're releasing valuable information, now all of a sudden it becomes important to have another method of control, and that means you must switch from open source to proprietary, and that's why you see so few people using open source software. So
yeah.
The answer is that, you know, all these people, as you say, want to maintain control of one form or another. They're just going to choose among these many tools in terms of maintaining control. And so when you look at just the sample people published, they picked another tool in some fashion.
So yeah, okay, fair enough, right? And the alternative hypothesis you could imagine, right? Which what I guess would have been my first order hypothesis is the subset of people who are publishing their work in an academic journal are less concerned with secrecy than the subset who aren't. Your hypothesis has the benefit of fitting the data, which is always nice. So one of the things we can do and have not done, but I will go back and do is. Pull out from the survey who actually published, because we collected that data to cross-check whether or not people were disclosing and publishing. So I can actually pull out a subsample of those who actually published and see whether their open source proprietary adoption pattern ends up matching the one you would predict. So that's testable.
I'm puzzled. You don't charge for the open source software; you do charge for proprietary. Clearly, you got to make money off the stuff that's using. What else are you charging for the actual?
This goes back to Scott's original question, right? Which is this is a company that is in the business of making gene chips, right? So they are actually physically selling a chip.
And what's the difference in the price between the software proprietary and the software not if you take the total?
I think the answer is it's relatively small. As a percentage of the total package. People are not, you're not paying mostly for the software. And that is potentially an important limitation on the scalability into the sort of pure software world of this stuff, right? Because, although I don't think it affects my fundamental findings, right? So it is a difference, but it's a difference that ought to affect Affymetrix and Affymetrix's incentives. And maybe it also ends up affecting the customer's incentives because they're already plunking down a bunch of money, and so it's only a little bit of extra money. And that might actually explain what to me is otherwise a puzzling feature, which is why so many of them go with the proprietary software, even in the academic world.
These guys are crazy about priority. And keeping secrets is the only way in which you can preserve that. So I think you really are sort of exaggerating the cultural differences here in terms of the way in which they sort of operate. But the other question I wanted to ask is, now you bring this stuff back to the Affymetrix board of directors, and they say, let me thank you very much. What we're going to do is just simply remove the open source software. When you've told us is that the thing that we thought they were going to do is to put it out in the public, they all treat it as proprietary when it comes to resale uses and so forth. Why should we leave money on the table? What do you think their reaction would be to that proposal?
It might be the right thing to do.
I'm not sure that it is. I mean,
I don't know that it is either,
right? But
is this perhaps just a form of price discrimination? But the problem is you can't use price discrimination unless you sort the market.
Exactly,
yourself.
Right. I mean,
and people are voluntarily sorting themselves into some paying and some not, but that's an odd form of price discrimination.
Yeah, I just don't know.
It's just advertising.
What?
What if it's just advertising?
Well, I mean,
It's not. I mean, that's not why they're doing it.
Market. I mean, my view about it is actually, I think I would probably take my recommendation and make it only proprietary. I don't know what I would do, whether I would lower the total price for the packages in two ways, but I this is a point in which I don't see any ways in which the strategic differences benefit the firm.
I think that's right. I guess I would make the following slight amendment. If I were a new firm in this business trying to make the decision of whether to engage in dual versioning, this evidence would say no. I don't know that it follows from that a change to an existing distribution arrangement makes sense, because it may be cost, but people are surprisingly resistant to changes that they feel take things away from them. Right? Whether or not it's economically rational for them to be so, right? The folks who've been using open source software.
Well, but just a quick follow-up here. Affymetrix has been lobbying in Washington for a number of years on exactly this question about open source genomics, because they don't want to pay patent licenses for the pieces of DNA they're putting on their chips. And so it is very, very important to their public relations message to say, you see, even for the very stuff we sell, we provide open source versions. And I think that public relations benefit is sufficiently great that it outweighs whatever few pennies are on the table.
Right. I mean, I just, yes. That's what
I mean. There are two different issues. It's patents versus, it's not open, they're not open, yeah.
Where they're making this language. Yeah.
Right, because they are Affymetrix is the victim of the anti-commons, right? I mean, they make the human genome on a chip. Every gene patent in the world, they are infringing every time they sell a product.
There are ways they can be very profitable doing that. We've got a paper on that too.
Right, which is but the way they have been very profitable to do it is to litigate aggressively against those patents and to defeat a bunch of them.
Paper gives a whole nother non-litigation strategy for them to make
a
lot of money.
How big a company is this? I mean, you know, I think my difficulty in understanding all of this is that I don't get enough of the business model, business background, dollar context. And is this a $500 million a year company or a $10 million a year business?
I don't know the market cap. I mean, it's a reasonably sizable biotech company. It's not pharma. It's not big pharma sized, right?
I mean, you know, you're right, and then there are, Roche has a version of DNA on a chip, Affy has a version of DNA on a chip, they have slightly different business models, and those different business models hugely eclipse the difference in pricing that you're talking
about. Yes, absolutely. $450 million. Okay, there we go. Bob, you got to love the internet. Bob?
That's great. This may be another version of Mikey's question. I apologize if it is, but it's basically how generalizable your findings are, in that when we dealt with the open source people, they wanted to opt out of this material defect warranty, and in fact we let them opt out of it on the basis that because of the numbers of collaborators and introducing new code, and, that there will always be bugs, and in fact, lots of contributors introduce bugs. So it strikes me that when I'm selecting software that isn't the same source code, but does the same thing, or say word processing, I will take into account, well, do I want open source where there might be people introducing bugs? Yes, there might be people fixing those bugs. Just taking into account what open source really is like as compared to proprietary, which maybe wrongly, I believe, doesn't have some of these problems. So isn't that a large number of factors that you aren't able to measure
Well, what that ought to tell you is people are sorting in various respects, right? That is into an open source preference or a proprietary preference. I'm not sure, by the way, that the predicate assumption is true. My guess is Microsoft would tell you, we have an enormous number of people collaborating on writing code, right? And every time we do new versions and create stuff, new bugs get fixed, new bugs get introduced. The story for you know, how code is created there is different primarily in a theory of the firm sense than I think in the actual way in which the code itself is written. That is, you have a bunch of different people throwing stuff together from different perspectives. They all happen to be employed by the same entity and therefore at least theoretically directed in the same way. But that's the primary difference, not the way the software actually is written.
Let me interrupt by saying you're exactly right. The Microsoft and others said exactly that to me. It was just a matter of degree, how many people are involved.
Yeah. Well, and the other thing from the kind of principles perspective, right, is as I recall from time as an advisor on the project, you know, the open source folks originally wanted out of the whole thing, right? And they wanted to say, we are not a contract, we're gonna, don't include us in your software contract world, and that history may well have then sort of driven you can put us in, but only if we get certain benefits that that would make life easier for us.
I think that the PR angle may be very important. One of the reasons why we enter into non-exclusive versus exclusive agreements, leaving aside client all wants us to maximize the use, leaving aside like NIH directives on research tools, there is a perception, and we get much less criticism when we're not seen as tying up our IP in exclusive licensing agreement versus non-exclusive. So that's
PR. Yeah. Good. Would you tell that to other universities?
Well, is your practice standard? Or is Auburn exceptionally enlightened?
You know, they're just really pushing more towards the non-exclusive. Yeah. Of course, companies want exclusive.
Companies all want exclusive, and part of it is an industry difference, right? It depends on what industry you're licensing into. Becky.
Have you talked to Affymetrix about this? I mean, have you asked them why they're offering the different versions and what they...
When we started this, I worked with Affymetrix, right, in putting and designing the study, coming up with the idea, right, and there's no question as to why, you know, why they are doing it from a marketing perspective, which is that they think the answer is different people are going to want either open source or proprietary versions because they will use it in different ways,
so
right?
We haven't said we're offering both versions because we think we will benefit from the open source community working out the bugs in our software. They haven't said that?
That's right.
Okay, that's interesting.
I think dual versioning is quite a common strategy these days, right? But of course, it's a business model that's sort of halfway in between proprietary and open source, right? And so I think this is more scalable. That sort of reasoning is more scalable to people who do dual versioning, right? And therefore, in some sense, are making a choice of agnosticism about which is the better path to take than it says about maybe the folks who only release on open source, who may have a different set of viewpoints or priors about the relative value of the two.
I was just going to say, but remember, even if you don't do dual versioning, there are many people who are combining open source software and proprietary software in their very offerings. So it gets to be a more complex question than that.
Well, right. Although that turns out, I think, you know, that is another whole set of issues, right? Because I mean, if I end up blending open source into my proprietary software, then I am arguably subject to the GPL for the whole thing as a result, and so my, quote, proprietary software may now have become open source software. There are, in fact, businesses whose job it is to do open source audits to make sure you don't have any open source software that one of your coders went out and grabbed in your proprietary piece so that it doesn't infect the rest of the whole, which is why it seems to me that the fact that the users here, even the ones who are modifying and re-releasing, are so happily making kind of mixed use of both, is such an interesting finding.
Okay, I think we have to call this today. Thank you, Mark.
Thank you.